Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome back to the Capitalize Podcast. I'm your host, your fave Rachel, and today is episode 53 with entrepreneur, marketing agency owner, investor, and proud father. We got Alano Vasquez in the building. So Alano, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I remember the first time I met you was at like a barbecue. It was like for a split second.
Yeah.
Like I was like, I know I've seen people post you, but I didn't necessarily know for sure. It was on the day of your anniversary with your wife.
Yep.
Talk and you about literally, an anniversary event. You literally were like, I just want to say thank you for her giving me a chance or whatever the heck, like putting up with me. I don't know, whatever. Anyway, it was nice.
Yeah.
So it was like funny to see your humor right then and there. I already knew you were like a pretty chillax guy.
I mean, because on anniversary, usually out of town, out of the country, doing something extravagant. But during COVID, what are you going to do?
Exactly. Right?
So I was like, hey, a dinner will suffice. Let's stop by a barbecue, say what's up. And that was about it.
Wow. That's crazy. Love it. Cool. So I know it's funny because like you have this humor that you are like, obviously you're doing really well, but no one would ever know. I guess you could say
I don't,
when they first meet you, because you're pretty humble, like you're pretty nonchalant.
Yeah. I
if
mean,
that makes sense.
I guess if people fault on the side of thinking I'm too successful, that's cool. I'm not going to say no.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't even contest if people were like, oh, we question your success.
Yeah.
Because I don't look at success just in money. I look
oh,
at
for
in
sure.
the value you're providing and a lot of it, just like balance, mental health, how's a family, and really try, because I've chased money early on and it's exhausting. And it's supposed to be a marathon, right? So the only way I've figured out how to run this marathon is by balancing spirituality, family, health, wealth, you know, and all of that stuff collectively. So in that sense, successful, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wealthy.
There you go.
Yeah. Love it. So how exactly did you even get started in entrepreneurship? Because I know that you talked a little bit about your background. Like you went to school, but you went to school for econ.
Yep, econ major.
Okay.
I went. I did the almost a 4-year junior college track at Sacramento City College.
So you started there.
Started there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because
in high school,
that.
I went to a pretty good Catholic high school, Christian Brothers locally.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But once it came time to like junior college, I was like, I don't know what I want to do. I was studying art, a little bit of business classes, and I got accepted into UC Santa Cruz, and UC Santa Barbara, and I was torn because Santa Cruz was for art and Santa Barbara was for economics, and I'm like, this is a pretty divergent path right here in life.
Yeah.
Do I want to be a starving artist or do I want to pursue money and put my talents to the side? Luckily, when it all shook out, I feel like I'm doing both of those things, doing marketing, economics, you know, design and all that stuff. But at that point, I was like, yeah, I want to get further away from home. Santa Cruz weather wasn't warm enough for me. When I went on campus, Santa Barbara was just awesome. And so I did the econ program. It was super expensive. Got out of there as quick as I could. I spent 4 years, I joke with everyone, in junior college. A year and a half.
Wow.
And like upper, you know, division work.
Yeah. So you were paying for everything?
Paying for everything.
Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't qualify for any grants or anything at that point because I was still too young to qualify for those grants. And I didn't really get any family help except for maybe like some books bought for one quarter or whatever.
Gotcha.
So the debt added up pretty quick.
Yeah.
So I graduated and I think a lot of people probably even listening are looking at maybe going to a school that's expensive or trying to figure out a way to kind of, you know, bolster their resume for job applications. And I was like, yeah, I better go to a prestigious school to really look good for companies. I wasn't even thinking entrepreneurship at that point. But when I graduated, I had so much debt, over like $70,000 of debt. I was just thinking completely like lizard brain. I was like, how do I survive without having any money really to be able to pay all of this debt? And you have like 6 months of forbearance.
Yeah.
So I just went out and got a sales job at a tech company. And I started to kind of grow my career there. But during like tough times, they went out of business and I got laid off.
Wow.
And so that was a tough time. And
yeah.
That's when I was forced into entrepreneurship.
Do you feel like you learned a lot in that sales job?
I did. I learned things that I still apply to my business today. And the cool part is one of the gentlemen that I worked with was kind of like a sales manager to me, now works with me. So
oh,
I've
wow.
kept a lot of the relationships and people I worked with back then, I still work with today. But I learned very like fundamental stuff that you could still technically learn in a textbook or trial and error. But I learned it at like an accelerated rate because it was working for a startup, you know?
Okay. And I don't want to jump too far ahead, but what I'm really curious to know is because obviously just getting out of college, what were you like, 21?
22, yeah.
22. You get out of college, you go and you work for this tent company. Now you're in your 30s and you're working with people that you worked with when you just got out of college.
Still, yeah.
So it's like keeping a relationship like that, I feel like there's so much that could happen where like maybe an ego would get involved, or like I'm sure that you've had arguments with people or like disagreements. How do you continue to keep these relationships when sometimes like things are bound to happen regardless? Like even me, like making new friends or just getting closer to people, there's always something that I personally feel like, you know, personalities may clash, especially if you're working together. So how do you keep that like ego in check?
It's a great question. I mean, a really relevant example would be the gentleman who I've like hired on to bring onto our agency, who's becoming a partner now. He technically works for me, but I felt like I used to work for him. So he was like the older, more senior sales guy by a few years, and I really looked up to him. And sometimes he could be a little brazen, and I'd be like, oh, this guy's a dick. Like, I can't deal with his personality. Yeah. But I felt something in my gut that kind of just told me, like, try to focus on the things that you have in common and not the things that you don't, right? And I've tried to take that in a lot of areas of life. You could walk into a room with a bunch of people that don't look like the ordinary group you hang out with, but you look for the similarities and not for the differences. So along the way, I've stayed in touch with him, even when we didn't work together and I got laid off. He stayed at the company, and I would reach out on occasion and just try to see how he was doing, look for the similarities in our relationship and not the differences. And now we're like really great friends along of being business partners. So that's definitely helped.
Look for the similarities, not the differences.
Everybody looks for the differences.
I know. Naturally. So how did you even learn that? Like, did you learn it from a book? I feel like your mind is just like personal developed so well.
Well, it's because I'm old now. No.
You get wiser in age, I guess you could say, but that's good.
I mean, so I think I've told you before, like I don't drink. Right.
Yeah. And you stopped drinking how long ago?
Almost 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. And in that process, like I was just hanging out with groups of sober people, right? Different kinds of groups. And sometimes when I hang out with these groups, I would just feel like, oh, I don't have anything in common with these guys. Like they don't go out and have fun at the same time. Like we don't do things the same way. But then I started looking for the similarities and I'm like, he's also a father. He's also an entrepreneur. And I started seeing those things. And then I kind of started getting, you know, brought into their world. And it was able to help me just keep a way clearer mind in life, you know? Yeah. So the similarities and not the difference thing has just been huge in my life. And I suggest it for everybody. Yeah. 'Cause you could even learn it in like a really shitty job that you failed at and it just didn't work out. Like there's still some golden nuggets in those failures for sure.
Definitely. So you got pushed in entrepreneurship right after the tech company.
Yeah.
What was your first business? Is it the business that you're still in?
When I say entrepreneurship, the first job out was like a real, real startup where there's just like one other guy there and he hired me to be the head of his sales.
How do you find these things?
He was one of my clients from my previous company who was trying to bribe me the whole time. Not bribe me, but he was like,
he must have liked you.
He was a really cool guy. Yeah, a little older gentleman from Newport Beach, software guy, had all of these different little ventures, was looking to see which one would stick. He just wasn't strong on the sales front. Mm-hmm. And so while he was my client when I was at the last company, he's always trying to bait me into working for him. So I called him the day I got laid off, and I got a job offer.
Wow.
Right? But what was tough about that, where I feel like I got some thicker skin and just persevering, is I believe at that time my wife was pregnant when I got laid off, and we had an offer in for a home. Mm-hmm. And so I lost the job. I was like freaked out for a few hours till I called this guy and I was like, I got to get resourceful real quick. So I tapped into those relationships. Right. And then I got an opportunity to work for another startup and like get equity. We worked together for a few years and it wasn't a good enough offer for me to stay there. And I still work with the guy today and he's one of my clients.
Wow.
So I've kind of leapfrogged through each stage of my career and kept strong relationships with people along the way, even when some people might've just called it quits and broke up.
Yeah. What do you think is one of like your key characteristics when building relationships? Like what do you feel like you do so well that makes people actually want to continue to work with you?
That's a good question. Yeah. I think something that's top of mind is always being very empathetic of other people's situations. And to be an empathetic person, you have to like really destroy the ego, right? So to empathize with someone is for me to even understand like what it is you're trying to do on your podcast. Like, you know, you're a busy person. Why are you going to take the time to interview five people throughout the day? Because you have this huge mission you're attached to. And so me putting myself in your shoes and being like, this girl's like blazing trails. Like I could be on all these different podcasts, but why do I want to help her out? Because I was in her shoes at one point. I wasn't even bold enough to podcast. Like this is light years. You're light years ahead of where I was at your age, even the podcasting, you're ahead of a lot of like agency owners that are afraid to do this as professionally as you're doing it. but just sat right there, like me empathizing with you here mm-hmm. is how you build relationships. At least is how I have. Mm-hmm. But to empathize with people, you can't like have a big ego. You got to put yourself in their shoes. And I think they feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like you've never, I mean, do like, what about doing people shady? Like doing people wrong, if that makes sense. Like
it I know pops that sounds up in my really head bad. All the time. That's always yeah. going to pop up. Okay. Yeah. It's being able to, and I don't know if you want to call him like a life coach or a therapist, but I see a gentleman everywhere, like every 2 to 3 weeks, who's like into cognitive behavioral studies and stuff. And he helps me differentiate like my ego voice versus like what I really want to do. What's like a part of my goals. And so that ego voice always pops up. It's always like, hey, that guy screwed you over. So when you in this relationship, like just take what's yours and send him on his way. Mm-hmm. And I listen to that for a second. And then I kind of put that through a filter and I go, no, here's what I really should do. So it's not always just listening to the first voice that pops up in your head, but kind of sitting with it, being patient before you, you know, take an action.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's helped.
Okay. Wow. So then how did you starting your own business come about? Like what was your first actual business of your own?
Yeah. So the, a lot of marketing agency owners in this, you know, in my case kind of come by it by accident. So, right. I was hired at that tech company to do sales and then they didn't have marketing. So I had to learn marketing and web design. And then that evolved into me wanting to start my own marketing agency. And I spent a few years just trying to do all kinds of stuff, branding, web design, until I finally decided to niche down and to really say, here's who I want to work with. And here's the problems I'm trying to help solve. Things didn't really evolve as much. And so what I've tried to do is align what I'm personally passionate about in marketing with what's kind of trending out there and to create a few brands. So you'll see a lot of marketing agencies where they say, we can help everybody out there. And they'll have a list of all the industries that they work with. But it seems kind of generic. It's kind of like a person you meet that's just cool with everybody and they don't really have, you're like, who are you really? Like you're too much of a chameleon. And like you haven't really claimed who you are. And so we have three niches. We help people in the trade show space, tech and software space, in the cannabis space. And so instead of lumping all that together into one brand, we've created three separate brands, kind of like how FedEx is Freight Delivery Express, three separate websites, three social medias. So it's a lot of work trying to manage those brands, but it helps the customer because you're able to resonate with their problems, being empathetic, providing real value because you have a niche focus. Mm-hmm. You're not a generalist in that sense.
Yeah. So how was it difficult for you to get your very first client?
Oh, of course.
What was like your biggest struggles first starting out?
I would say, and I think this is especially important for the people listening, is that, you know, trying to fight the imposter syndrome that everybody else has, right? Like everybody, I do too. Every time I venture out into something new, I'm like, oh, this is my first time investing in a company. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. People are going to think I don't know my shit. Mm-hmm. And then it just, you know, I kind of get insecure like that.
Yeah.
But realizing that your first time doing something is your first time doing something. There's got to be a first. And you're going to feel like, you know, the butterflies of it, or you might feel like a bit of an imposter, but just leaning into it and almost acting as if you have already succeeded in that space. So what I tell people is your confidence should precede your competence. Essentially, be willing to put yourself out there and say, we can get you those results. And then even if you haven't done that for somebody, going to the end of the earth to get those results for them.
Yeah.
So that's definitely helped.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Love that. Okay. So when did you start your business?
About 5 years. The next March will be 5 years ago.
Wow.
Yep. And supposedly that's the hurdle.
Yeah.
It's like,
really?
If you can make it past 5 years.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Things
should
be going in a great direction.
I mean, I feel like if you can make it past 1 year.
Yeah. I mean, 5 years is like you're here to stay, but the first year there's a huge drop off, like 80%.
Oh.
A huge drop off.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And even, I mean, imagine how many companies started this year. That first time.
I know,
talk
right?
About a year
before
to start.
COVID too, you know what I mean? Like before COVID, even maybe during COVID thinking, oh, I can take advantage of the recession, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's an opportunity to do that.
Oh, for sure.
For sure, but I see all these funny memes on the internet. It's like showing us like down the road when we're like in our 40s or 50s. Yeah. And the waitress like brings a bill and it says total amount 2020.
Oh, it's like
and then
you
just
literally
getting triggered,
get depressed.
And you're like, oh no, thinking back to this era.
Right.
But
yeah.
Like you were saying earlier, you know, in talking to parents or like older people in general who've been around for a few more decades, they're like, this is the worst we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And really kind of embracing that. And
yeah.
I've been trying to wrap my head around like what that really means. I'm kind of curious, like, I don't know, how has it affected your business in a sense?
I mean, for me, I'm in the Airbnb space, so travel, right? Mm-hmm. Like alternative accommodation, and like our competitors, I wouldn't even say competitors, but you know, an alternative option is a hotel.
Yeah.
And a lot of hotels aren't even open, or they're open to a limited number of suites. Mm-hmm. So for people that are in Airbnb, some of them aren't, you know, opening up their units, although, you know, some of them can. So some of the, one of the biggest companies named Sonder, they have thousands of doors basically, and they have certain clauses. They're smart. They have certain clauses with complexes where they're like, oh, you know, if there's ever a recession, we don't have to pay rent. Mm-hmm. If there's ever like this drop in the stock market, we don't have to pay rent. They're smart, you know, but there was a certain time where it's like, okay, you've used up like all of your options to not pay rent. Yeah. You need to pay rent, and they're still not paying rent. So it's like some places are trying to get away with it. Some places are taking advantage of the fact that landlords can't kick them out, you know. And for me, our worst month was April by far. March was like cancellation. April was trash. Luckily, we didn't lose money. We just broke even.
Yeah.
But after that, it's literally just been up from there. Oddly enough, but also most of our units are in Texas. So Texas is open. People are coming to Texas. People want to be in Texas. So it's been good. It hasn't been horrible. Like,
is that just by chance that you happen to be in Texas, or did you foresee like, hey, if something ever happens?
No, actually I didn't, but I chose Texas because they don't have as many regulations. Because in Las Vegas, it's almost illegal. Like, there's so many loops that you have to jump through.
Yeah.
Sacramento, out of all the places in California, is actually one of the most lenient. All you have to do is get like a specific license from the owner, or if you are the owner, you have to apply for it. And if you you have to be like registered, right? But that's out here in Dallas. All you have to do is get permission from the owner or the complex. That's literally it, and then it's yours.
That's convenient, because I've heard of friends doing it in California specifically, and it's a lot more red tape, right?
Yeah.
And California shut down, so I mean, imagine
that. I know, and I'm like, who's even gonna come out here, you know?
Yep.
But I mean, I'm here, so it just depends on what these people are doing, I guess you could say. A lot of traveling nurses right now too.
Yeah.
So it's been good, but I mean, how's your business doing? I know that we were talking about how basically, you know, surviving, or even flourishing in a time like this.
Mm-hmm.
How have you guys been able to do that?
Yeah, so what's interesting is the division that I mentioned, like the trade show division, we just launched that in March.
Oh my goodness. So like, what happened, just kidding, we'll put it on the back
like,
burner.
We do these, like, we develop these really cool booths. We don't fabricate and build the actual booth for trade shows, but we do like all the touch screens that are in the booth. So we help brands tell a better story in a more visceral way where people could touch stuff, retention's higher, generate leads. So we're like, we launched all these campaigns and we're like, why we got one good lead, I think, and it was just crickets, and we're like, what the hell? So it was almost interesting, now that I look at it in hindsight, the lack of like leads we were getting was kind of a precursor to what was really happening. All of these trade shows were being shut down back in February, and we weren't even aware of it because it was outside of the country, because some countries were more privy in their media to what was happening with COVID even before we were, right? And so as soon as you hear like Trump banning all flights, everyone got pissed at him. They're like, this guy's overreacting. And then now in hindsight, you're like, oh wow, he was kind of ahead of the curve with a lot of the bans on the flights and stuff. And I saw that happening, and I was like, holy shit, I just launched an agency in the event space where they're all shut down. I freaked out for about a month.
What do you have, like, or do you have all different separate like business structures, like business names, business structures?
So there's one entity.
Okay.
It's an S corp, and there's three divisions, three DBAs. Okay. Essentially.
Okay.
We have a software product that's brewing up that could spin off to being its own business, but we've kept it under one entity. Otherwise, it's an accounting nightmare. Like,
got
I have
it.
A CPA firm that manages all that, and it'd be expensive as hell.
Oh, for sure.
And so for right now, like, we were like, what are we going to do? We have all this great marketing. We have a brand we built. We've had leads from the past. So we pivoted to virtual. So we took the L and we turned it into a W, right?
Good.
By saying, hey, we're going to start doing virtual booths.
Okay.
So tapped into old relationships from way back in the day. And we're like, hey, do you want to do some virtual trade show booths? And they bought into it. And so we've done some pretty awesome like interactive booths, right? Stuff that goes from anywhere from $5,000, $10,000, $50K plus to help these companies get some revenue that they were getting before in-person events. But that's like in my career been my first major pivot.
Yeah.
Where I've ever like hit a wall And I'm like, dude, there's nothing in the event space. Mm-hmm. We have to go virtual.
Yeah.
And so it's been exhilarating. I just got off of a call talking about like the state of the industry and all that stuff. And that's why I think kind of going back to like anybody that's going through this time right now, every industry, even when they're tanking, there's an opportunity to pivot and innovate. And there's some amazing brands like in Sacramento, like Shelby Elias, who's in the lending business, mm-hmm. who started during the last recession. Mm-hmm. But he started at a time where he probably figured out some unique way and unique angle in the lending space to build his brand. So even at the bottom of an industry, you could start, I truly believe, if you find a unique angle in it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And how do you think someone would do that? Do you think it starts with research? Do you think it starts with knowing someone?
It's the non-sexy, non-glamorous work. Okay. Where I was like just reading the most boring event trend magazines where it's like 60% of people who've canceled their in-person trade show are going virtual and they're spending X amount of money. And I'm like, wait, we could sell a virtual booth, but nobody's done that.
Yeah.
And so we just started putting marketing out there and then getting projects from it.
Wow.
It's kind of having that faith, yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure, adapting. So how do you even come up with what niches you go into?
That's another great question. And I think sometimes it's like you could refer to recent things you've done where you might have an idea. So like, for example, like I'm big into fitness.
Okay.
I mean, you might not
I'm surprised you don't have fitness companies then.
I know. Yeah. Well, they don't usually spend a lot on marketing, unfortunately. Like the average fitness marketing agency might charge like $2,500 to $5,000 for a website.
Okay.
We'll charge like $25,000-$50,000 sometimes because they're big like B2B cybersecurity tech companies. And I love fitness too much and I didn't want it to become my full-time like that.
Got it.
But I wanted to do that, I mean, I'm passionate about fitness and I love being able to talk to other fitness, you know, people who are inspired and stuff and want to build their own brands. So that's an opportunity to like niche down. That would have been for me in my particular space where you're mm-hmm. taking your passion for what you're good at and your passion for your hobby and you're kind of meshing it together.
Yeah.
And so I imagine there's going to be during this time, now that everybody's kind of getting outdoors more, right? You can't go into movie theaters and the mall. I could see a bunch of agencies or, you know, just entrepreneurs creating new businesses around more lifestyle type of things, like mm-hmm. in hobbies and really kind of productizing that stuff.
Yeah, I feel like that's been a lot of talk lately as mm-hmm. well, maybe within the last few years, like doing something around what you already enjoy, because if you do something around what you don't, you're more likely to quit. Mm-hmm. But I want to know what you think about that, because you do marketing, which obviously you get a chance to be creative, and then it's also an econ with, you know, money. Mm-hmm. But also, like, what you chose marketing because that's something that you learned in the startup, or is it something that you just realized you were passionate about or you saw the potential in it? Like, what made you go that route? And is that your actual first business by yourself or did you have others? Answer the first question first.
Yeah. So the reason I chose the marketing is because at the end of the day, like I'm like my personality type, like I did like a DISC assessment for myself and the mm-hmm. team where you're like the dominant, the influencer.
What are you?
A high I, so I'm an influencer, and then D for dominant. So like pretty good skill sets for like a salesperson. Mm-hmm. But even when I was doing sales, I always felt this like lack of good marketing, right? And I think a lot of people suffer from, even with their own personal brands, like a lack of good marketing. And it's not because they aren't unique themselves. We're all super unique, but they haven't really identified like what goals that they have and figured how to tie everything together. So I went on this kind of crusade to figure out how do I align marketing and sales, where they're so disconnected usually, where now when I talk to other like business owners and they're like, oh, you're just a marketing guy, I'm like, I bet you I could outsell any of your salespeople. And it's not just off of like polish or like sales, mm-hmm. snake oil salesmanship. Like mm-hmm. there's like a science to it, mm-hmm. right? This like fundamental approach you take. But on top of that, I'm a marketer. So I thought like a great way to help companies succeed is being great both at marketing and sales. I obviously don't own a sales agency. It's a marketing agency today. Yeah. But I could see that evolving into more like helping companies with their sales as well.
Yeah.
Because getting someone leads is cool, but if you can't close them, right, that's tough. Where in your case, for your business, I imagine Airbnb, in a sense, provides a lot of the leads.
Yes.
Right? And then there's still a lot of work to do even on getting them to book.
Yeah.
You probably get a lot of people coming in, asking questions.
Yeah, inquiries and whatnot.
Yeah. So imagine you're responsible, though, for also the leads. Mm. Then you would have been like a... I don't know, you had to create your own vacation rental booking business. Mm-hmm. And that would have been really tough.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, COVID also helped us basically look into creating our own website, which we did, mm-hmm. and, you know, being able to do bookings off platform, mm-hmm. where we would, you know, we would secure deposits, we would do contracts, like things like that, to make sure that we don't have any issues when someone does book, and like background checks. And you got to think about that too, and like verifying their identity, and
yeah.
are they going to try to do something? You know what I mean? Because I've had bad guests on Airbnb. I mean, I've had,
yeah. Well, you got that insurance policy, I'm sure.
Exactly. Oh, see, there you go. You know.
Have you had to exercise it at all ever?
I do it at least TV once goes or missing twice.
Every once in a while.
No, I mount all of them. But I mean, I guess if they really cared and yeah. wanted the TV that bad, they can mount it. But no.
Yeah. Thankfully. Knock on
table. But no, yeah. I mean, in any business, there's the ups and downs. I feel like a lot of people. I remember the big wave of people starting marketing agencies, like when Ty Lopez came out with that. I'm in my garage. You know what I mean? That video. I mean, it just like spiked. Like everybody had one.
Yeah.
So I just want to know, like, how have you continued to grow yours each and every year and continuously evolve and make sure that you guys stand out opposed to other competitors?
Yeah. So I would say with us, like our growth is slow and steady. Right. And I would love for there to be like hyper growth hockey stick years. Like, but at an agency, the thought of like doubling or tripling revenue in a year is unlikely.
Why?
So unless you have outside relationships, like I never worked at an agency before, so I couldn't go out and, you know, bring in a big client into the agency. It's been us slowly like acquiring referral type of business. Now this year we're finally stepping on the gas and running like ads. I looked at like our ad campaign today. I was like, oh, we spent $500 today just on Google ads. I'm like, wait, times that by the month. I'm like, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So it's easy to get a little afraid and timid with like scaling.
What's interesting is that you're a marketing agency that mostly does referrals.
Exactly.
And now you're just now starting to market your own marketing agency.
Yep.
You know?
That's funny you point that out.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of agencies, believe it or not.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's because they're so busy like helping other people. I always liken it to the saying, going back to fitness, we're like the fat personal trainer.
Yeah.
Right? We're like telling everybody else how to get leads, how to grow their business.
Yeah.
Even one of the companies I was doing marketing for, I invested in because I saw them grow so quick.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't even take our own medicine at that point. And it wasn't until later when I was like, all right, it's time to start doing this marketing. But that didn't have so much to do with just like business.
Mm-hmm.
That had to do with more of me personally saying, this is where I want to focus. So I didn't want to just start trying to generate revenue in areas I wasn't passionate about. So I had to kind of come to terms with what I was really passionate about to like double down, invest in the marketing and make some big choices. Because when I started, I had two other original business partners and I had bought one out about 3 years ago and I just bought the other out about 12 months ago.
So you're like 100% owner.
100% owner of the business right now. And then I have a partner I brought on who's on a vesting schedule. So he'll own some stake in the business, not half by any
means. You think that's the startup? Like guy in you?
I think it's just that it's hard for when running a marketing agency, I'm sure with a lot of other businesses is different, is to have 50-50 partners because it's kind of like having two pilots who are attached to like the joysticks or, you know, the steering wheel in that sense. I wanted to fly left. You wanted to fly right. We didn't agree on the altitude, the risk tolerance, and I was willing to take any amount of risk. Ironically, I have kids, right? And their schooling is expensive. I have a lot at stake. And so I just chose the direction of more risk. And it just so happened that that was like the end of the partnership at that point. And that was like, I tell everyone, that was like going through a divorce. So if you could get into a business, be confident enough to be able to do it on your own, instead of feeling like, hey, because I'm afraid of taking all the risk, I need to have a partner. Unless you know that that person's like your soulmate in business, almost as much as a marriage, I wouldn't recommend it. And I've been married for about 9 years. And I'd say the compromises sometimes you have to make in a business partnership are harder than in a marriage, right? Because at least in a marriage, you can kiss and make up at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Business, it's a lot tougher.
I'm sure.
So I'll probably keep it the way it is for now. And I love the new partner I brought on, Ryan. He's super sharp. But just structuring it different than I originally did. Because that was expensive buying it.
And you learn.
Yeah. Yeah, I could have bought at least a house in buying out my last
Jesus. A house in California or a house in Georgia?
In Sacramento. You're like, okay. What area? East Sac or
right?
Natomas, Northgate? Exactly.
Okay, you're wrong for that. Just kidding. That's funny, though. Wow, okay, no, I like that. And I was saying, like, the whole, like, investment schedule, it reminds me of, like, when you mentioned you working for a startup and he let you get a a piece of the pie.
Business. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it just seems like you've learned so many things from all these different opportunities that you're really applying.
Yeah. And that's what's like, I could have read a little more to avoid a lot of this. Now I'm trying to read at least like 1 to 2 books a month. And it's not crazy. Mm-hmm. 20 pages
on
in the morning.
On specific things that you're trying to learn.
Yeah. On specific things. And then some more like effervescent reading where I just like kind of like wind down. Like I was reading about the like Comanche Indian history recently. Like just to like wind down. But at night, I don't read business books.
Okay.
In the morning,
I
try to miracle
morning it.
Yeah, because
then you're about to get your day. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So for, I would say for what, if I could give back to the old version of myself, like in junior college, I would have been doing a miracle morning back then. And there's a book called Miracle Morning.
Yeah, I forgot
the author. But it's like those first 60 minutes are so precious.
Tell me what you do.
So when I first wake up, I immediately go over, have a big chug of water. I put my phone on the other side of our room. It's like 30 feet away by the bathroom. And then that wakes me up, gets me out of bed. Huge chug of water because you're dehydrated. Go down, put on some good coffee, chug in the coffee, do a little quick Bible study in the morning for like 10 minutes, super quick. Meditate, yoga, and
meditate.
Then read for 20 minutes.
What does your meditation include?
So the
breathing?
I just use Headspace.
Okay.
It's a pretty cool app. Plugged Headspace, which we were promoted by them, but sponsored by them would be huge.
No,
but, I mean,
no way, really?
Headspace has like millions of people
meditating. Yeah, no, I've heard of it.
Yeah, and that right there, if there was something that I'd want to never be taken away out of my life, it'd be meditation. And so I think I'm like on like a 60-day run streak. Maybe I forgot to meditate 60 days ago because of travel, but that like really grounds me. And that gives you time to have some like introspection. And I remember when I was young in my 20s, you don't really want to be with yourself. You want to stay busy, you're on the go, but to be with your thoughts and present to work things out, that was tough. Mm. So if I could go back to then, create a miracle morning, you know, at your age, for example, I feel like I would have been like light years ahead of where I'm at now.
You feel like that helps a ton.
Yeah, totally.
Because that's like your
time. It primes you. It primes you for the day, and it allows you to really be intentional about what you're going to do that day. But the thing is, results, you don't feel them immediately. Mm-hmm. And in this generation of instant gratification, if you're like, I did a miracle morning for a week, my life hasn't changed.
Yeah.
Then it's probably not. You're not, it's not going to work for you.
Yeah.
But you have to be committed to saying, hey, I'm going to try this for 60 days, 90 days. And then your life will change, especially if you set a time to wake up.
Yeah.
Like 5 a.m. I went boating the other day and I woke up at like 5 a.m. and I was like so exhausted, even on the boat, but it was because I was so committed to starting the weekend right.
Mm-hmm.
When most people want to sleep in.
Absolutely. Yeah. Makes sense. I totally get that. I'm the same way. I like to make sure that I like wake up, work out, like get everything that I need to do done, especially with like work, before I go and do any of those extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like on the weekend or
whatever
I have planned that is aside from my normal schedule.
Yeah.
So I get that because it feels right. You know what I mean? If I even forget to do one thing, like I'd like to journal. If I don't journal in the morning, like, cause I'm just so like on it. Mm-hmm. I literally have to do something.
That's
like, I have to do something
journaling
to release
thing,
my thoughts.
I've tried to, and I can't,
really?
It's hard to stay committed to.
See, I've done meditating. Like that was actually, I was telling a past guest that last year I did one new thing every single month just to like get myself out of my normal routine. Just try something new. Cause that's always been like I love trying new things, you know, and I don't want to be like all over the place, but I feel like if it's scheduled, you know what I mean? Why not?
Yeah.
So anyway, I told myself I wanted to meditate like every day. No.
No.
I like to journal. I like to journal. I be with my thoughts by looking at what I need to do and like, you know, any type of problems that I'm going like that I have going on, I'll go and I'll address them or I'll, you know, set out a plan or whatever the case may be. But journaling that, you know, all that good stuff.
That's a form of meditation maybe.
I would say so. Yeah. I mean, it keeps me like very grounded.
That's awesome.
So, there's certain things I have to do every single day.
Yeah.
And if I don't
break routine, that's not good.
Exactly. But so one of the reasons why I even created this podcast, and I usually, I really like talking to you because you're very, you're like an owl. You're very wise.
Wise.
You're like the
ironic?
Wise owl.
That's the name of our company, Wise Marketing.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that. Look, see,
there
the world just kind of works for you or whatever.
Yeah.
So the reason why I started this podcast, and I always like to ask the guests this at the end, it's nothing crazy. It's not like crazy question, like coffee or tea, like type thing.
Mm.
But it's, I started this, as I was telling you before, that I knew when I was younger that I wanted to be successful, that I wanted to like have the things that I never did. I just didn't know how. So I wish I would have had something like this, this podcast, or people like yourself that are already, you know, more established than me, to kind of point me in the right direction, or like share what you've been through and the things that you've developed over time to help you. So that's one of the reasons why I started this podcast. And I remember when I would actually get introduced to like my first original mentors or people that I knew were winning that I wanted to kind of follow in those footsteps, I would always ask them like, hey, what can I do to help you? What can I do to, you know, work with you or something like that? So anyone who's watching this that really appreciates what you do or is even interested in that space, what are the things that they can do to reach out to you, to potentially work with you, any opportunities that you have? If you have them, now's the time to kind of share.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, I mean, like I said, at Wise Marketing, we do all different kind of things. I think what's probably the hottest thing out there for who we could probably help the most of is people who are trying to become entrepreneurs. Like, I mean, look at the industries that are taking off during a recession. I mean, some of the sin stocks take off, right? Like alcohol, cigarettes.
Yeah.
But I mean, cannabis is actually really helping people right now. Like, I think that what CBD is doing to kind of offset like people having to take antidepressants, SSRIs, it's this miracle drug that's going to really impact and be disruptive. And I think a lot of people, as we know in California, use cannabis. And the cool part is they might be passionate about it, and they might also know other successful people. And so I would want to empower them to maybe pursue that industry that's huge. And it's an industry we could help out with. Our division at Wise Brand Buds, we help cannabis companies build brands in very lean ways. You don't have to get a license necessarily. You don't have to own a farm. You could contract manufacture and develop like a cool lifestyle brand for yourself. And I think that will appeal to a lot of younger people that are actually benefiting from the drug, because it's really helping people out. And we could do some pretty amazing work with them.
Cool. Where can they find you?
So they could find us at wisebrandbuzz.com. They could find for cannabis stuff, Wise Interactive for just trade show stuff. And, you know, just shoot us a message if you want to learn a little bit more about marketing.
Cool. All right. We'll include it in the description.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
All right, guys. Make sure that you guys check him out. And also, if you guys have any questions for him, you can reach out, send a message, or whatever the case may be. Again, episode 53. Thank you, Alano.
No problem. Thank you.